I'm just pleased as can be that we are going to be able to entertain you in the next hour with Stephen Pellegrino, who came all the way down the Mon River in our direction today. It's nice of you to do that.
I actually crossed a river. That's an un-Pittsburgh thing to do.
Yeah, it was nice. Steve is an amazing accordion player, storyteller, and just somebody who's a lot of fun to have with us. And we'll talk a little bit.
Oh,
throughout
yeah,
the
because
hour.
That's half the fun. It's very interesting because coming here, it was neat since my last visit because it was clear that we were sort of on the same wavelength in terms of the historical references of, the Mon Valley. And
That's you're good.
okay. So it was very interesting because last year, I don't know if you'd heard about it, but they had an accordion pool party in
Yes,
Lawrenceville.
where they emptied the pool and filled it with accordions. And much to most everybody's pleasure, although some were wondering if they were going to pour water back in.
Well, at least just up to the ankle.
Yeah, but there were what, 11 or 12 accordion
Oh, I
players?
think it was closer to 20. It was very interesting. Zombo came and was the MC because a lot of these people were from Lawrenceville, and one of the main goals of the accordion pool party was to try to get that pool opened up again. It's a beautiful, huge pool, neighborhood pool. And as you know, we've had all these budget problems, and so some of the pools were closed. But what was interesting is when I was there, somebody was making a documentary, and they started to talk to me, and I realized how much of my life has been affected by the accordion. Because I grew up in the Mon Valley, and of course, at that point, everybody had an accordion. The Beatles hadn't brought the
Well,
electric
sure.
guitar
And
to the
there
fore.
was probably the man that went door to door selling accordion lessons, right?
Right.
I'm serious.
Well, no. This is very interesting because I grew up in a little town called New Eagle, which is really across the river from Old Eagle, which originally was the Star Mine.
I thought you were going to say originally it was just Eagle.
Well, it was. It was Eagle. Then when they crossed the river to dig for more coal, it became New Eagle and called that Old Eagle. So you were right. You had the
yes.
jump on
And
me.
just to be tangential to our tangent, one day we'll talk about large, which originally was medium, and prior to that, small. But that's a whole other. And
I always do like to stop by the large hotel just because it's the large.
If you're wondering, in the Mon Valley is a town named Large. Ricky and I actually always got a kick out of the Large Volunteer Fire Department. Well, anyway, New Eagle, grow
Well,
it
so
up.
New Eagle. And so it was very interesting because, I don't know, I was about 6 or 7, and my father had a little 12-bass accordion. And I have to digress for a second because this is a very special accordion. My father, when he was a kid, wanted to take accordion lessons. So his father bought him a nice big 120-bass accordion. They went for the lesson. The teacher didn't show up, so my grandfather got upset, sold the accordion. And so then my father carried ashes out of the high school for months at a time for 50 cents a week so he could save up to get this accordion. So it's a special little accordion. And the thing that's the most special about it is one time he wanted to tell me a story about, how like in the spring or the fall, even though it's warm during the day, you can't take for granted it's going to be warm at night. So when Roosevelt won, he and a bunch of friends jumped in the back of a truck with that accordion. He took his overcoat with him, even though it was warm. They drove around the infield of Forbes Field, and he played Happy Days Are Here Again, right? So as a kid, the story was meant to teach me about the overcoat. But for me, it was like you drove around the infield. And what happens? I digress because the accordion pool party made me remember all these accordion stories, my cousins. And I remember nowadays, because I'm on all the accordion websites, because it links us all together, a squeeze box is a term of endearment. But I remember my cousin, when he was a teenager, quit playing because they used to make fun of him because he played the squeeze box. So I just, found it very interesting that it brought up all these memories of the accordion.
Well, and it's interesting, as you and I are about the same age, I think, and as you get older, I'm fascinated by the fact that as your brain rearranges itself and sort of defrags to make room for more stuff, other stuff starts. I'm finding myself remembering things or old memories sort of loosening and coming out, and they're accurate. They have to be, but I'm remembering different things as I get older than I used to, and it's really kind of neat.
Well, you know, the sad thing is it's when you reach a certain age, you know, I'm a plaster. So, you know, it used to be I was always the youngest guy on the job, and now I'm the oldest guy. So it's sort of strange because one of the things I liked about being young was to hang out with the older people because you heard these stories, you heard these things, and now you're the carrier of the stories. And it's like you sort of wish that you had like recorded or written down all these stories from the family and this and that. But, you know, and I'm sure my kids roll their eyes because as a parent, you tell these stories over and over. And I think it's sort of genetically important to do that so that this family history sort of travels on. And this is another interesting point because you take Pittsburgh. There are a whole generation of people in Pittsburgh now that do not know what a lump of coal looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what smoke belching out of a, you know, 100-foot chimneys like. And so I just find it very interesting that we have become the carriers of the past.
Yeah, it's, you know, I was telling somebody the other day, would you believe if you were heading inbound on the Parkway East after you came out of the tunnels, you used to see three or four large stacks of flames and a steel mill. That's what you saw to the left as you came out of the tunnels.
Yeah.
And they looked at me, you know, no, you're making that up. And
It was incredible because when you think about it, starting on the south side and 2nd Avenue there where you're talking about, if you traveled down the Monongahela River, you would not be able to see the river till you hit Manesson because there were that many mills. And it's hard for anybody to understand, but we basically here in Pittsburgh made the steel for who knows how many bridges, how many airplanes, how many skyscrapers. And it's interesting because Tony Buba, who makes Chronicles, the demise of Braddock and the steel industry, showed his movie Lightning Over Braddock. And it was interesting, even though that movie is only 20 years old, how much was still in the valley and how it you remember at that point how you believed that, oh, we're going to turn it around. The mills are going to stay. But, you know, yeah, that changed.
It's a great film. Well, we should let you play a little bit, and we'll talk some more. It'll be say it and play it for this whole hour. If you're just joining us, you're hearing the voice of Stephen Pellegrino, and I always love having Steve here because we get to talk. And you know, it occurred to me, I don't think I have well, Rob's over there. If you feel like asking Steve a question, you could call us, or you could, you know, maybe email's better. You could just email us at slb@slbradio.org, and that will give you a chance to actually ask a question of Steve, or because as we talk about these olden days, and we're going to get a chance. We've got Steve all set up. We actually just gave him a monitor so he could hear himself. And sometimes the accordion and banjo players sometimes ask for those Bose, you know, cancellation headphones so they can't. I should stop.
Well, no, it's okay. I've heard all the accordion.
I know you have. Okay.
Well, I just before I start, I do feel it's necessary for me to proselytize a little bit about the accordion.
Please.
Since the last time I saw you, I purchased an incredible 1958 Excelsior.
And that's what you're playing today?
Yes. Yeah. A 1958 double cassado symphony artist Excelsior. Now, Excelsior accordions, unlike most of the accordions that were built during the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, was built in the United States in New York City. And they were very forward-thinking in terms of how they built their accordions. And what's interesting is they have full-size accordions, and then they have the size that's a little smaller. They call it the women's size. But it's interesting, their full-size is a little smaller because they were able to figure out ways to cram more stuff in. And because you can see this accordion isn't as big as some of you might see.
Yeah, yeah, it's It is. It's small. Yeah, I mean, it's still a large accordion, but it's about, what, maybe 30 inches by 20 inches, right. not extended. But
and what's interesting about it is people don't realize the accordion is basically a series of levers and springs. And the thing that makes it complicated is it's just so many levers and springs. And one of the other things I wanted to share with you is that the right hand on a large accordion has four reeds that play during the master. So if I play a master, this is like middle C. Okay, now they have a bassoon reed, which is just the low reed. And then they have the clarinet reed. And they have a piccolo reed. Huh. And the way they work this out is accordion tuning is an art, an incredible art. They call it a dry tuning or a wet tuning. And you're all familiar with the term musette accordion, which has that sort of kind of a wet sound, that sort of a vibrato. Well, what they do is they have three clarinet reeds. They tune one a little below that one and one a little above it. So it gives you a vibrato. So you can hear... That's the violin reed, which is the two clarinet reeds, and they're tuned off a little bit. And this accordion is tuned to 443, and, you know, 442 is usually the concert tuning. And what's interesting, and these accordions were set up to be wet because when you made it sound sharp, it stood out from all the other instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very interesting. If you go on the internet, it's just – insane in terms of how much information is out there about this instrument.
Well, two things you just taught me, I think, is first, an accordion is almost like an early synthesizer, at least in terms of providing effects, because doubling of notes or putting notes slightly offset from each other, and it's being done purposefully. The other thing, and I may be misunderstanding. Is there a limit to how many notes you can play at the same time?
Oh, no.
Or how many keys? Okay, you can.
It's just like any, it's polyphonic in terms of how many notes you can hit at the same time.
But there's a limited number of reeds.
Well, there are four reeds, but for each note on the master. But what's interesting is you can have them tuned specifically for – like I have another accordion, the one I played on the last show, which is called – it's tuned dry because I use a lot of pedals with it. And so I don't want to – because basically when a waveform is going, you say – because basically accordion's a sine wave. It's that – sort of like the is that the Stanwyck Street Bridge? That's a sine wave.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't want them to collide too much unless you want them to. So that's why I got that one tuned dry. Now take, for instance, this one. It has a bassoon, two clarinet, and a piccolo. Now, some accordions could have a bassoon, three clarinets. But I think there are some accordions out there might even have five reeds in the right-hand side. But, you're looking at a $400,000 or $500,000 accordion at that
point. But you can even the number of reeds does not limit the number of tones or the number of notes.
No. And it's just sort of like, I think it's sort of like, it's one of those formulas where, you just – I'm not very good at math. I can't remember it offhand. But basically, all these buttons are a different tone.
Yeah,
because they've combined them in different combinations.
It's like a combinatorial or a factorial.
A factorial,
And, oh my goodness, this is a.
But I find it interesting because it was an Austrian who was traveling through Italy, who ended up staying at a farm family's house, and he liked them so much he gave them one of his prototype accordions. It was the Soprani family. And nowadays the Soprani accordion is an incredible accordion. One of the sons decided this looks like something I can do, and they just started making accordions. So it's fascinating to to get involved in the history of it because in Europe the accordion is the lead guitar.
Well, it's interesting because two notes. And by the way, we will have Steve play at least one song, we promise. But a couple notes from Bob, who is in Washington, Pennsylvania. First, he says, I graduated from Monongahela High School. I never knew there was an Old Eagle, even though I know it was adjacent to New Eagle. And he also said, quote, say what you will about the accordion, but there would be no tango music without it.
All right. This is interesting because my grandfather told me that story, and because he was born in the 1890s. So it's like another one of those things you just – it's passed down.
Well, let's take a listen before folks think we're going to do is talk accordion. Steve Pellegrino is here, and we'll talk also about where you can hear him and what he's up to throughout the hour. We've linked, I guess we've linked to Lightning Over Braddock. It looks like, is that what we linked to?
Yeah, that was the performance last night.
Yeah, but here, what are you going to do?
I have a little tune I wrote called the Funky Polka because I'm trying to put a CD together that uses the accordion in non-traditional ways, and I think you might really enjoy this one.
Here he is, Steve Pellegrino. Pellegrino, and here to say hello to you is Bob, I think. Bob, are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is the caller there, Bob. And you went to Ringgold High School.
You went to Monongahela?
Yes, I went to Monongahela. I think we might have been 1 year apart.
Oh.
Paul Baker.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good, good. I was just talking to Cindy Barlotta on the phone, and she's going to tune in and hear you, too.
Oh, wow. It's so good to hear from you. It's so long ago.
Bob, yeah, that's what we were saying.
Bob is up in Clarion, and when I heard this, I just said, Bob, you got to go on the air. Was Steve playing accordion in high school, Bob?
I don't know if he was or not.
Well, I was a closet accordionist at that point. The guitar was just too popular.
Well, I'm glad you came out of the closet.
Well, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I used to sit in my room and playing Rolling Stone songs and stuff, you know, and then by the time I got to college, you know, you go to a party and, you bring out a couple Stone songs on the accordion. It didn't matter. Everybody was, it was so bizarre. It didn't matter. But I never lost heart on the accordion. It's making a huge comeback now. So I'm glad that I stuck with it.
Well, so am I. I'm glad things are going good for you.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, I haven't been to Clarion in a while. Yeah, that's up near Cook's Forest. And then there used to be a Clarion Clipper there, a big restaurant.
Yes.
Well, it's not here anymore.
Oh, that's too bad. Because my wife's from Scranton, and we used to go on 80 and then would stop there and have dinner.
That was right near the exit. It was associated with a hotel, I think. I remember that restaurant. If I'm right.
Yeah, it's turned into a physical therapy place now.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
See, that's my contention, that all of these shopping malls that we've built, just like we had to turn steel mills into shopping centers, like has been done in a homestead, I think these shopping malls are going to become assisted living centers and nursing homes. You'll have these totally enclosed environments as we get older. And then eventually we'll need to turn them in to call centers for technical support or something like that.
You got to write a book. That's a book, I'm telling you.
Everything, you know, metamorphosizes, and eventually we'll find out that we need to make stuff again. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling.
Yeah, Bob, good talking to you.
It was good talking to you, too. You guys take care.
Okay, we'll see you.
That was a fun song. Let's play. Yeah. I want to be sure we have you play some more.
Yeah, you know, I have a – we had this – lately in the news, we had this terrible, terrible mining disaster.
Oh, and, gosh.
I have a song that I wrote one time that I think would – I'd like to dedicate to these – to the miners, because my wife, who's from Scranton, it's a mining region. Well, back at that point, her grandfather was working in the mine and was killed. And at that point, they just took the body and dumped it on the front porch.
Yeah.
And this is a song about him, because it's sort of a play on words, because in the mine, as you were digging, what killed him was the bell collapsed, which means that the ceiling of the mine collapsed down on him, but it formed a huge bell above him. And it was one of the disasters that in those days would happen, because they didn't have the technology to get the thing, you know, propped up fast enough. So as he was digging, you know, 20, 30 feet above him, collapsed down and killed him. And it's called "For Whom the Bell Tolls." It's it's an a cappella piece, but I think you'll like it.
For whom the bell tolls, but not for Joseph Shea. The bell that had stole his life and left him dead that day. Dug his way through slate, cursing his daily tonnage, never knowing where his forward course would lead. Joseph Shea, for all is quiet now, the bell it just collapsed. Now leaves of sediment cover his mangled body, a shining pile of black gold, the straw bosses made their wage. For whom the bell tolls, but not for Joseph Shea. Bell that had stole his life and left him dead that day.
That was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, there's some references in there I just wanted to the company men that were sort of at the lower end were called straw bosses. They were the people that were your peers kind of worked for the coal boss. So he was your neighbor, but he was willing to, like, push you around to make a couple extra bucks. And it was sort of an insult.
So he wouldn't be in the union?
No. There was probably at this point there was no union at all.
Of course.
So and at this point, I guess if there was a union, he would be out of the union.
Yeah.
So that was sort of, you know, an insult. And the other thing is, if you didn't bring so much coal up, your tonnage.
Your daily tonnage, yeah.
You didn't get paid. So you stayed there if you wanted to make money that day till you got enough coal up because, you know, the slates mixed with the coal. And it was amazing because my grandfather worked in the mines at that point. He quit school in eighth grade so he could take the mules out. You know, it started that way. So he was one of the people that were out in the streets to get the unions going. And so one of the things that they got was in the mines on your birthday, if you work, you get triple time. And it's I don't know how many people. It's interesting. There's a Toured mine up on 28, which everybody in this region should go take a tour because when you go into the mine, it's black. If there was no light, you can't see anything.
It's dark, dark as a dungeon.
And it's cold. It's always 50 degrees. And fortunately or unfortunately, I never did that job. I just, you know, I'll visit. So I have a lot of respect for miners, and it takes a lot to go in every day and take that chance. It is ironic, though, that as a child on New Year's Day, there was a custom. If you wanted to have good luck for the new year, a dark-haired male had to bring a lump of coal into the house. So, of course, being a young kid, everybody was at work that day. So my mother would take me around the neighborhood with this lump of coal, and I'd have to go in and give everybody good luck. And it's funny because I still have a lump of coal in my basement just in case somebody needs it.
Funny, I got a piece of coke, from Clairton sitting sitting at home when I entered the house. And I'm guessing you know this. I know Steve does, but I'm talking to you that, you know, coke is the product basically of cooking coal at a pretty high temperature. And I think about that coke and, you know, what goes into making it. Working those ovens is not an easy job, and getting the coal is not an easy job. And I'm not this isn't meant to turn this into a political debate at all, but we talk about – people occasionally talk about, you know, the safety of nuclear power or other – safety issues. When you look at the big picture for coal, my gosh.
Yeah,
you
know, it's quite a long trail.
It's a long trail in terms of just how many people, particularly in overseas mines, but here in the United States too, really meet a lot of misfortune in mines.
Yeah, it's really sad. And, you know, it's just I guess and this leads on to something else because this all tied together with the accordion pool party. I started to realize that at this point I am a dinosaur. We are the end of the Industrial Revolution.
Well, you plaster you play the accordion and sing songs about the – that's a good point. And I feel that way too to some extent.
Well, one of the things I like about this show, which has always been and what is its at its core – is that this is a local show with local people, and nothing is done in terms of, oh man, we could boost up our ratings if we had this sort of thing or that thing. What you do is you bring in the people of this region, and you let them share their stories. And I'm always amazed by it. Even back in the day, God, because I've been listening to this thing as long as it's been on the air. Back when you were in number six cable place. So, what has happened is I'm putting a show together called Accordion Stories, or How I Grew Up in the Mon Valley with an Accordion.
Oh, nice.
And what I'm going to do is tell all the different stories, and they're all related somehow with an accordion. Somehow, you know, as the story winds around and gets, you know, there's all this intrigue.
The accordion monologue. See, I could say. You're welcome to it.
I'm sorry.
You're welcome to it if you want it.
but it's an instrument that is very versatile, and I'm here to proselytize.
Just a quick comment, in terms of presenting original stories and not. And we talked about this for years, I don't want to turn this too inward, but, let's make SLB a kid show, or let's make it a talk show, or let's make it a pure folk music show, or let's make it this, or let's make it that. Bill and I and Ricky, I always felt so strongly, guess what? There's plenty of people who are quite capable of handling diversity and interesting people and music and thoughts and ideas, including children, including adults.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think these days, more than ever, people are craving that kind of lack of sameness. And what's presented, particularly in radio. So,
I totally agree.
I'm glad that resonates with you, because there's all sorts of ways to approach broadcasting these days. This is probably it's the best way I know how. So.
Well, no, and I think what can I say? Yeah. You're at the top of your game, and this is a show that not only does it give a voice to the region, it does show the diversity, and it does show that you can have a classical pianist, a guy playing like boogie woogie on the accordion, or who knows what. I mean, my son was on this show years ago playing the clarinet.
Yeah,
and it's always an interesting trip on Saturday morning on the airwaves.
Let me mention, it's 18 before noon. You're listening to the Saturday Live Brigade. Steve Pellegrino is here. We got to start Steve earlier next time. We'll start him at 10 o'clock or so, because we could go on and on and on. And if you have a question for Steve about the accordion, or about any of the music you're hearing, or about the Mon Valley, he can take a call at 412-586-6300 or 1-888-SLB-RADIO. Let's have you play something else here.
You have a little boogie-woogie tune. This is an interesting story. As a plaster, there's a lot of torque on your arm and your wrist.
Ooh, I bet.
And there are two pieces of cartilage. They're triangle-shaped in your wrist, and I've torn mine.
Oh.
And one of the most painful things for me to do is play the piano. And so I had to give it up. So I was talking to a friend I hadn't seen in about 15 years, and when I told her, she says, "Oh, my God, how are you going to play boogie-woogie?" And so I said, I guess I should do it on the accordion. So her name's Joan, and it's called Joanie's Boogie, and it's a boogie-woogie tune on the accordion. Thank you.
nicely done. That's Steve Pellegrino. I enjoyed hearing that for a number of reasons, not the least of which is my mother always this is my first Mother's Day without my mom, and she always liked playing Boogie Woogie.
Really?
Yeah, and when I was a little boy, she would just I can't believe how fast she could – on the piano, how fast she could play Boogie Woogie. And it was a lot of fun to hear that.
Well, you know, this is interesting.
You saw me lean up, and I was looking at your fingers because it was not to compare you to my mom, but it was
memory. It's very interesting because when I was around four, my father had these 78s. That were Boogie Woogie, and he had one of these little turntables.
Yeah.
And I remember laying on the floor, playing those records over and over. When I hear Boogie Woogie, I go insane.
Yeah.
I just – there's nothing like it.
Well, when my mom was recovering from a brain aneurysm, and this was like 30 years ago, and she had a lot of trouble, the cognitive difficulties with a lot of things. And she ended up making a full recovery. But in the initial stages where she was having trouble with very simple everyday aspects of language, she went up to a piano. She and I one day started playing the boogie-woogie music just with perfect precision. It was unreal to see that.
This is incredible because I don't know – you know, I don't run into too many people that even – you know, appreciate Boogie Woogie. I could listen to it all night and all day.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And it's incredible. I wish I could have seen her because I'd love to sit in a room with Boogie Woogie. But I'm sorry for your loss. But it is nice that these memories stay with you. So when you hear Boogie Woogie, you can have a very pleasant memory of,
absolutely.
Of your mother.
It's one of the nice things about music, too, in terms of a power of healing and connection. We're both – that's what we should do. We need like the old-time accordion and not really religion, but old-time accordion proselytizing. You're right. We're sort of, you know, out there.
Well, yeah. I think so.
Maybe if everybody got an accordion on their block, the world would be a better place, one per block.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be.
We could put them much like miners, you know, in oxygen masks, you know. You know, we could put them
emergency.
Yeah, you know, when people get sad, you just you know, you strike it open and you get out there.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that was interesting is growing up in the Mon Valley, the big there was always a wedding to go to.
Yeah.
And in those days, you know, nowadays I find a lot of people, oh, don't bring the kids, blah, blah, blah. Everybody was there. Grandma, great-grandma, great-grandpa, the kids, the baby, and everybody had a good time. And one of the stories that I remember is that, you know, as the evening progressed and people imbibed – people got happier and danced more. And one of the images that I don't ever forget is that some of the older people would take their false teeth out, put them on the table because they were afraid they'd drop out when they were dancing because they were having so much fun. So, you know, as a kid, this is the way it is, I guess. So I have a lot of pleasant memories of that because, you know, of course, everybody would teach you how to, like, do that kind of dance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the local accordion teacher had a band, Mr. Galani. And I remember the big rock song they had, they play Wipeout. So all the kids would wait all night to hear Wipeout so they could do that.
That would be like the shout of the era, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was and, you know, you miss those days because, you know, I remember at my brother's wedding, my mother said, oh, my God, we had 35 cases of beer and there wasn't one fight.
When I was probably 16 or 15, I went to a wedding with my then-girlfriend who was Polish, and it was her – I think it was her sister's wedding. And, you know, I worked really hard because I knew I was going to have to polka at this wedding, and I'm not much of a dancer. And, you know, I right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left. And she and I were dancing, and it – one point we did something such that she slipped, fell over backwards, hit her head against the dance floor, and actually lost consciousness for a split second. Everybody stopped. You know, everyone's looking, and I'm like,
oh, my God.
Oh, God. I you know, not only do I not know how to polka, but I've caused an incident here. And she it was very quickly she regained. I mean, she probably didn't really lose consciousness.
It was probably
it's just my memory.
Yeah.
But, you know, we went to the ER, you know, to make sure she was okay. And I can recall having this slight sense of relief that I wouldn't have to dance the rest of the night. But, of course, also the sense of shame for having caused an incident at the wedding, which I suspect nobody remembers but me at this point.
Well, you know, you're pretty young and it's sort of – well, you know, what's really interesting also after one of these – because my father always said you have a couple beers to feel good and you don't need more than that because, you know, there are some people that always overdo it. But when he would come home, he'd grab his accordion and he'd say, "You never saw anything yet." And he'd take my mother. He'd strap the accordion on her backward – on it backwards. He would –
On your mom.
On my mom. Uh-huh. He would get the – he would put his arms around her to dance. He'd play the accordion and dance with her.
Oh, how cool is that?
I was like, this is a floor show special. So – and I've tried this over the years and it is really hard. Maybe I just never had enough beer. But it's very, very difficult to dance, you know, pull the bellows, keep the beat and of course –
Well, your hands are flipped, I think. No, I guess they're not.
They're in the right place. It's almost like there's a person between you and the accordion.
Yeah.
And of course, my mother was 5'2", my dad was 6'2", and it was
that might have helped.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But you know, they would tell stories about how you know there was not TV when they were first married. So they would get together. My mother would play the harmonica. Somebody would play the drums, and these were the family members. People would just gather and play. You know, and it's so sad now because even in our lifetime. Used to be able to go out almost every night of the week and hear live music, even if they were cover bands or whatever, live music. Now it's sort of like, you know, it's all pre-recorded and, you know.
Well, there are, you know, fortunately, and I agree with you, there are pockets, you know, where that's happening. And there are a growing number of folks that instead of getting together and watching TV, they get together and play music.
Yeah.
Or they get together and listen to phonograph records, you know, which is a great thing.
Yeah, no. And it's – we're dating ourselves. But it's interesting to be at a certain age because there's so much that you can look back upon. And I think you made a really good point that there are these memories that do surface that you've forgotten about.
It's bizarre.
And it's a rich – it's an age in which – there's a rich, lineage of memories that you can call upon and share. And I just hope it's the same for everybody because, you know, it's a really – I don't think I'd be another age. Now, of course, you know, physically you're not what you once were. But in terms of the memories and the, you know – the things that you can say that you witnessed, you know, it's incredible.
Well, and my only – I think about this stuff a lot. And, you know, the only solace I think we can have is I'll bet our parents were saying something similar. And their parents were probably – you know, right now it's the internet. You know, 100 years ago it was the railroad changing life. I really think – the railroad and the internet are more similar than people think because that's really what connected the world or the nation in the case of the railroad very differently than it had been before. But so I think there's hope that future folks will have a lot of things to remember.
I've been around the block enough to see that things come back around. It was very interesting. I heard an interview with Jack White from the White Stripes and he just bought some warehouse in, I don't know if it's Memphis or somewhere, and he has a stage and he has, you know, he's putting out vinyl. But what's interesting, he has an 8-track tape recorder right next to the stage, and they record, and that's it. And they were talking to one.
Oh, you mean an 8, like a multi-track?
A multi-track,
okay.
8-track.
I thought you meant a.
Oh, like, not an 8. No, not the kind. In
when
your,
you said
in
vinyl,
your
I was okay. I got you. The multi-track.
But what's interesting is they were. There's this old, like, sort of rockabilly singer, Jackson, Wanda Jackson, and they were recording her. And he was saying, you know, then we start to listen to the tape, and the bass player says, I did this wrong or that wrong. And he said, no. we're just going to take this out just the way it is because that's what it is. Because once you go down that road of we got to correct this and correct that, then you've got the bass player and the drummer sitting in the studio for 6 days to get the track perfect.
If they're even in the same city.
So it's things all come around, and it's always great to see when that generation starts to pull upon the things that you experienced in when you were younger. And, you know, there's hope.
Absolutely.
There's always hope.
Yeah.
So.
Gosh, we've really flown by here. We have about we only have about 3 minutes of radio time left. We should have you play something else. Before, first of all, we have to do this more often. And I think it would be fun to do it with phone calls, too. And secondly, though, are you playing anywhere soon, or is there anything?
Well, like I said, I'm putting this accordion stories together. And when I do, I'll let you know. Probably in the fall. I do a thing every July 23rd. It's called the Alexander Berkman Labor and Music Festival. And one of the reasons I instituted it was because I was talking with my wife one day, and she said, you know, we have this incredible labor history in this area, and it's really not taught in the schools, and it's really not shared. Because for us, we grew up in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I put together a sort of evening with lectures about different players like, you know, Carnegie or Frick or whatever. And I also get different musicians to come and write original tunes.
Nice.
So we have some Berkman songs. For those of you who are uninformed, Alexander Berkman happened to be an anarchist who was in the 94, 96 riots in Homestead. And his girlfriend was Emma Goldman. Unfortunately, he attempted to kill Mr. Frick but failed and ended up spending time in jail. But and we use that sort of as a focal point just because it's a historical reference that in many ways people, you know, recognize, because then it doesn't make it Homestead or Braddock or Pittsburgh. It's sort of a internationally, mm-hmm. you know, recognized sort of thing. So so it's July 23rd. It's a Friday night. It's going to be at the Frick Fine Arts Auditorium at Pitt, right next to that mall.
Ironically, mall. In the Frick yeah. Fine Arts Auditorium.
Well, you know, it's a nice little theater. And what we do is it's all acoustic, you know, no amplifiers. So, you know, we have if there's a drummer, they maybe just have like a snare and yeah. you know, a cymbal. But that'll be coming up. And I will keep you abreast of the accordion stories. And I am putting an accordion album out called Accordion Anarchy.
Excellent.
So I'm hoping to do a little – I have a heavy metal tune that I'm going to do with the accordion and a couple other little surprises. Also, Tony Boob is working on a new movie called Thunder Over Braddock, which I'm doing with him. So I keep busy amongst the plastering and the drywall and the accordion.
Excellent. Well, we need to have you back sooner rather than later. We have about a minute. Do you think – could you sort of play while I do
what
I need to do to get us –
This was one of the first tunes I ever heard, and I love it.
Great.
Do
you mind if I talk while –
too?
And we're just going to sort of have you take us out right till noon. Oh, that's an easy one for me to talk over. You are hearing Steve Pellegrino, who we thank for being here with us today. And thanks also to Stephanie Guo from the Pittsburgh Concert Society and the Center for Young Musicians, Violinists. And we also thank Jamie Graham from the Allegheny County Health Department and Luba Lutkowski from the Poltava Ukrainian Dance Company. And Patty Jo Lambert from the Barns of Butler County. Join us again next Saturday for the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade at WRCT Pittsburgh, WSAJ Grove City, WCUC Clarion, WNJR Washington, WMCO New Concord, Ohio, WIUP-FM Indiana, Comcast 21, Verizon 47 at PCTV, and slbradio.org.